Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? March has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right. And here we are Friday. And we have a return guest. He's been on here several times before, Albert Lee. But before we get to Albert Lee, today's podcast is titled, and the title was, Amish Enterprise. And then I added on to it, Amish Enterprise, the unfair advantage. And when I say unfair advantage, that's the unfair advantage, which is a positive thing, which anybody can, if you adopt some of the principles of the Amish and Mennonite people, you will have an unfair advantage when it comes to, in a positive way, when it comes to general prosperity, including home ownership and living the kind of lifestyle, I mean, reasonable lifestyle that you want to live. So Amish Enterprise. Now this, Albert recommended a book. This, he recommended it to me a week ago today. I think, yeah, Friday. I ordered it on Friday, last Friday. And I got it on, Amazon delivered the book to me on last Sunday. So ordered it Friday, I got it last Sunday. So I haven't had it a week yet. Sunday will be 1 week. So some of the things we want to discuss, well, you know what, let's just open up Albert's mic and then go from there. Good morning, Albert.
Good morning. How's the audience doing out there? You know, glad to talk to you.
All right, great. Now, Albert, for those who are not familiar with Albert Lee, give us your backstory before we get into Amish enterprise
okay.
and Amish economics.
Okay, personally, I grew up in West Fresno. It's a small poverty area of Fresno. And I was born poor, grew up poor, but I was always wondering and thinking it had to be a better way to live in this society. So what I did, I grew up when I was 18 years old, 19, I got married. But I was going to City College before I got married, at the junior college here in Fresno. Believe it or not, let you know, I've had hardships. The first time I flunked out of City College because I was not interested in school, per se. I was interested in running women, girls, that is. But I got married at 19 years old, and after that, I started having a family, and I said, I have to change. Otherwise, I don't know where I would be or would have been today if I would not have changed. So what I had no skills, nothing like that. I couldn't even hold a regular job, less known working. And so my wife told me at the time, you have to get educated or I will not be with you. That was the best thing that could have happened to me because I'm the first one in my generation of family, siblings, that graduated from college. And I went on to college, City College. I got a real estate certificate. I got two AA degrees from City College, one in liberal studies and one in real estate. Then I got I went on and kept working, you know, working at different jobs. And I worked at Hartford Insurance was my first job. And it was in claims. It was in property claims. That's what got me into real estate, the interest of it, because of all the fascination and the things that could be done through real estate. So what I did, I graduated from Fresno State, California State University, in business. I went on and got a business degree. And that wasn't enough at the time, so I was still fascinated with real estate. So I went on and got a broker's license in real estate in California. And after that, after I graduated out of Fresno State, I was gung-ho to buy my first real estate, my property, first real estate to live in. I never liked it renting from other people because you don't have control. They can kick you out when they want to. You're living on the edge all the time, even though you might, if you own a house. My interpretation was, if you own a house, at least you got time to catch up the mortgage. They can't just tell you to leave and mean that. So I went and bought my first house in Fresno. And the way I bought my first house, it was creative financing. And at that time, we had FHA loans that you can assume. That don't exist anymore. But I met this young girl. The husband was in the service. She had to go back to where he was living in Europe. And so I bought my first house with $5,000 down, takeover loan. And that's what I did. After that, it really intrigued me to really go further into real estate. So what I was doing, I was buying real estate all over Fresno. And we have an area called Tower District. And I bought 10 or 15 homes in that area alone. And right to this day, from the college, I bought a fourplex. And I don't know if anyone ever heard it, called the Painted Ladies. Well, that was San Francisco color. And my wife and I, we decided to paint our fourplex like that, the same color, similar to those nice-looking colors. At the time I bought that fourplex, it was shut down. It was condemned. Nobody lived in it. So what I did is brought it back to rentable condition, put the paint on it, put fencing all around it. And I was just looking the other day, I sold it a while back, I was told that that same unit, fourplex, is worth right at $1 million now, right down from the City College. But I was into the underground phase of investing. What I mean by underground, you never would see it. It would never hit the bank. It would be out. It would be among people as investors that's all they do is buy. So I was deeply into that business for a long time, and I come to a point of being worth in a couple of $1 million, 2.5 roughly. And time I was the only minority I know in Fresno that was in that business. So what I did, I wrote a book called How to Make Money 24 Hours a Day. And one of the main people up north had heard of me. I think that's how Lee found out about me. And I bought so much real estate, then people started coming to me, want to know, well, how do you do this? So I went into consulting. And I've always been serious about certain things of life that maybe we didn't see or we wasn't exposed to. So during that period of time, close to my retirement, I'm retired now, I don't work. But before that, I said, I'm going to study. My wife used to live and was raised in Hutchinson, Kansas, Wichita area around there, Kansas. So I would go back and visit her folks. And what I've learned out of that visit was the true way of life and the true way of living. And that way was keep it simple, stupid, okay? And what I did was learn you can have anything you want. But let me back up there first. I used to study books, and I've done a research for 30 years all around the United States studying about positive attitude. I was seeking for an answer to why do most people stay in poverty? And what I've learned in true reality, it's the mind that keeps you behind. It's the mind that keeps you behind. And what I mean by that is we try to keep up with the Joneses, but you don't really realize the Jones might not have nothing. So I come to realization of the field this way. I'm going to find a way to live stress-free as much as possible. You're always going to have stress. Trust me, you will have it. But you want to eliminate it as much as possible because it is a killer. Among all of us, people, you name it. And what triggered me toward the Amish way of living was what made them tick. They didn't depend on anyone on the outside. It was family that I learned that they know how to do certain things and get what they want. They build a lot of furniture. And I've seen people, I've had friends used to make jokes to say, man, you mean to tell me you're not going to have a television? It's more to it than that. I was looking at the reality of the finance, the economics part of it. Like Lee mentioned earlier, you can take different segments of it and chop it up and pick what you really want to learn out of that. And it's something in there in those books. You're not going to find a lot of them, but it's something in the books that you do find that will give you some kind of avenue to go. But as getting back to me, okay, I have two AA degrees. I have a real estate certificate. I have a broker's license. I have all the things in real estate, and I've done mostly anything in the real estate you can mention. I've done evictions. I opened up a creative eviction business. I used to own apartments, 16 units by the college, and I learned everything it was about what to know about real estate. But one thing I never learned until the end was how can I buy a property debt-free without a bank loan on it? And again, we never pay for nothing. Trust me. When people say I'm gonna burn the mortgage, That's, you might burn the mortgage, but you're not burning the taxes, the real estate taxes, each year. So I always say, never say you're going to pay off a house. Just say you're going to pay off the mortgage, because control is through the community, the county where you live. And the point is to that, reason why I know, I followed evictions, I followed foreclosures, I followed tax sales, I followed overages. Overages probably most people don't even know about. But what I'm going to break it down a little bit. Overages is after the owner lose the home they were in, they don't know that it's money in the back end. When the banks foreclose on that property, you have a certain amount of time to recoup. You'll never your name's off, but you can go in and get the money that was left over. Because most owners that have owned the property for 10 or 15 years, they got equity. But I've seen a lot of them lost due to not knowing what to do. And that's so sad. So I helped a gentleman about a year ago, and he had $40,000 after that sale. And I had to help him get that. He got it. We got it back. And he said, Lee, I didn't know. I said, most people don't know that. So that's why I say I have studied real estate in all phases. And another thing, I'm going to say this. The system got most people believing they got to have 20% down or they got to have 40% down. That's the conventional way. I'm not used to buying property like that. And I've had students come to me, and it has been proven to what I'm telling you. I've helped them get into properties that they never would have got into. The name of the game is creative financing. It still exists. But a lot of the older-time gurus, they got into it where they never thought, well, what's going to happen if I don't get a job and I'm buying all this real estate? I'm going to run negative in the hole, which that's what happens. So what made me study people that had money and kept money was the Amish and the Mennonites, because they would buy, they would build, and they never worried about a mortgage. I know it's hard to believe, but it's true. And I've come from a situation where if we quit feeling sorry for ourselves, you can move ahead. We can't blame everything on the system. You got to create the system yourself. And I can see that, and I tell all my clients, I tell them that. Don't feel sorry for yourself. Go out and get it. Go get it for yourself. And when you tell most people that, they get scared because it's the unknown that they never experience. But you're gonna fail in life. You're gonna fall in life. But make it a good fall and a good failure, because you learn something from that. I've had many of setbacks. I don't call them failures. I call them setbacks. I've filed bankruptcy two or three times in my life. But I can still tell you now what not to do and what to do. And the Amish is the way of life. I tell Lee all the time, that's the future. Next 20 years, everybody going to be hip to what the Amish have been doing for hundreds of years. And it took me over 50 years to find that out, okay? And what I try to tell my clients and audience, just if you don't want to listen to me, look it up and put it in your mind that I wanted Mr. Lee telling the truth. Research, that's what you need to do. Point is, you will get out of the rut. Poverty is a state of mind. I've written books on that too. Strive to Arrive is one of my books. But positivity, again, it scares people. It really does. It scares people. And you can get out of that rut, and when you do ever get out of that rut, you'll find ways to make money that you never thought that was possible, because your mind is working in a positive way. And that's where, again, the Amish come to my way of thinking. Because as you get older, and if you have to retire, which you will, you live to get there, what are you going to do then? Okay? You're going to retire with a $1 million in debt? Is that what you're going to retire with? See, you got to give these things first preference, first hand. And we're going to get older as we keep living. When you're young, you're not really thinking about that like that. You figure, oh, I'm going to live forever. But if you retire, most people that retire today is really practically broke because of the way thinking when they were young, and that's what the problem is. You go to a wealthy person that may be worth millions and millions, you can't communicate with no negativity. They're not going to listen to you because they know your mind is in the gutter. I don't care if they inherit the money or they made it themselves, you got to learn how to manage it to keep it, okay? And I've seen a lot of people over the years, like the lottery. Okay, you go out and win $1 million in the lottery. You go out and win $500 million in the lottery. Don't you know most of those people are broke within 4 or 5 years? And the reason why, they did not know how to manage and to put their money into other sources to multiply. You should control money. Don't let money control you. That's the idea of it. But we only have about 3% of the population that understand what I'm saying right now. Again, poverty is a state of mind. And that's what I learned growing up as I went through the stages. When you start making money or creating money, all phases, you won't have time to think about no negative stuff. Because you know what you can do with your life. I call it God. The mind to me is God, okay? He gave us 5 senses. Why don't we use them? We don't, though. We don't. I've helped churches. I'm not bragging. I've been to churches that my siblings go to and showed them, hey, this is where it's at. The problem is here. Because it happens, the negativity is in every phase of life. You got to be able to notice it. And how you going to notice it? Because your mind is in a positive gear. Think about that. Think about that. Now, I've written 5 books in my life right now. I flunked out of college when I was in junior college. I was told by my counselors in high school to take a trade. You'll never do nothing with your life, Lee. You just don't. You don't have the calculus and the math to get through a business school. I did it, but they told me I could not do it. But what if I would have believed that and bought into that? You think I would be where I'm at now? I wouldn't be here. They don't teach that in high school. Because they don't really understand what I'm telling you. And I tell you, if you ever learn that game and understand, high school is just a stepping to get to other places. But then, let me say this again. Just because you don't go to college, that don't mean that you're not going to make it in life. Look at Ray Kroc, 6th grade. Okay? What is that telling you? It's not all about college, but what I'm saying is pick a subject that's going to interest you, going to put you in a funk every day. You never get tired of it. It grows, it grows, it grows. Next thing you know, people coming to you, Albert, or whatever, what makes you tick? What do you see in this? Well, I don't let my mind rest. I've studied all of this. That's why I know so much about the Mennonites, the Amish. That's an area that's really, and I tell Lee all the time, that's untouched. That's a gold mine there for the person that has a practical mind and willing to pay the price to learn what they do and how they do it. You'll be a better person, okay? And I'm a minority myself. Believe me, I trust me. I sympathize with you guys. But one thing I don't sympathize with, pity, okay? If you pity yourself, you're going to always pity yourself. I've talked to people where I grew up at. I mean, people sitting on the corner, the curves of where I used to live. I mean, had master's degrees, singing like, could have been singing like another famous Franklin. Tell me, when I was young, interviewing him. I was only 10 years old, but I was curious to know why were they sitting on that corner. And I would go talk to them, and they would always tell me, Elbert, don't do what I did. I gave up. I got discouraged. I got on the bottle, wine bottle. I can't get off. And I would tell them, no, I don't buy that. Your mind is in a funk. You put it there. And most people fail because of that. That's why I had first-hand information. Where I grew up, there was nothing but failures living around the area. Winos, people sleeping all night on the curb, didn't have a home to go to. Shooting down the street, someone may have been shot, two or three people laying in the street, lying in the street. I seen all that. I seen a Vietnam in West Fresno. You got to remember that, okay? Now, if I can do it, I've been there and done that, you can do it too. If you really seeking for an answer to your life, listen to what I just said. I've helped a lot of people. I don't like to brag. I helped a lot of people over my lifetime. I made them successful marriages, successful millionaires. I made them feel good about themselves because I feel good about myself. You can't give nobody nothing if you don't have it yourself. Trust me. Go ahead on, Lee. I'm done. Go ahead on, Lee. Finish it up.
Okay, here. Thank you, Elbert, for that. Let me see. Let me go to my program notes here. Now, we're talking about Amish. The title of the program today is Amish Enterprise, The Unfair Advantage. And when I mean unfair advantage, and I heard the unfair advantage part. I was listening to something last night or early this morning, still dark out. When I heard this, one of the keys to success, one of the major keys to success, is sit down and figure out what is your unfair advantage for success. Okay, now, the Amish and the Mennonites, now here's some things that I pointed out. I mean, well, number one, I noticed that they have some common denominators that many of them live in rural communities and off the grid, where their expenses are dramatically lower than if they live in a heavily, densely populated metropolitan area. Number two is many of them are in, their families are entrepreneurial families. They were born into it, entrepreneurial.
Right.
Next, they have family-based businesses that they were born into and they still maintain, and that's part of generational wealth. And not only do they have family-based businesses, and we're talking about within each individual household for the most part, they have even developed those into family-based industries. In other words, and this is how an industry chain might go. Let's say you have an Amish woman who's married to an Amish man, and he has his businesses and she has hers. I mean, they're collectively one anyway, but
multiply.
So she might she might have a bakery where she bakes or makes and bakes shoe-fire pies, peanut butter pies or cakes, sells dinners. They have a restaurant, but connected to, but where do they get the food for the restaurant? Well, that is connected to the family farm. So, see, now you're developing it. That's all family controlled. All right. So they have family-based industries as well. They live in debt-free housing because, to a large degree, they will build a house with finance what I call using social capital. In other words, family and friends get together, neighbors get together, and they build the house or they build the barn. And here's another interesting thing about the Amish in America.
That's right.
When it comes to church buildings, particularly the Amish, they build it big enough. They don't build an individual sanctuary or a church. No, they hold church services at each other's homes, right? Whereas, you know, when he was alive, what's his name? Dr. Robert Schuller in the Crystal Cathedral. Man, that cost millions to build. And then they got into financial problems because, you know, shortly before he passed away, you know, they were trying to raise money. To keep
do you know do you know how he built that that church? He built that church debt free, but he used other people's money, donators. That's what it was, donations.
Right.
He would donate each window in that church. I've been there many a time when he was living, and that church was all glass. But then he always would talk about, well, this is debt free. It was, and when it cost $20 million to build that church, and the last time I heard, that church is worth over $100 million. I mean, excuse me.
Okay.
But he's passed on. But he was, you know, he grew up in Iowa. Now he had a little bit of that in that system in him, Lee. No, but don't forget
all
that.
Right. Well, now hold on. But they got into financial problems too. Because they were trying to raise money for me.
You know why though?
And
you know
then
why they got into
his son fell out.
Yes, right. That's where it started. His son got jealous of him. I used to really be a big follower of him. I got all of his books over the years. But his son got jealous of him. His son's got a doctorate degree. But I don't know, but the daughter was more on his side than his son. Well, son got jealous, just outright jealous. And it kind of, I think that really knocked Dr. Schuller down. He probably couldn't believe he had a son to do that, but it happens. Success is a mess, and that's part of it right there. And that's what we have to learn.
Now. Right. Now, let's see. All right, now, according to Wikipedia, what happened to the Crystal Cathedral in Garden Grove, California? Crystal Cathedral Ministries filed for bankruptcy in October 2010 and in February 2012 sold the building and its adjacent campus of Orange, I believe, County.
It was a monument. It was a monument. See?
The building was especially interior was renovated. Or, let's see. Crystal Cathedral Garden Grove.
Don't you know they had burial sites there, too?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I toured that many times. Okay.
The history here. All right, Garden Grove Community Church was founded in 1955 by Dr. Robert H. Schuller and his wife, Arvella. The congregation reformed the church in America. Let's see. The church for sale services in space rented at the Orange Drive theater.
That's right. That's where he started.
They kept it simple at the beginning.
Yes. Okay.
They kept it simple at the beginning.
You're right. You're
go ahead.
Right.
Yeah, they
well,
kept
what
it
happened
simple.
Was,
they printed out. Yeah, they.
Lee, cutting in right fast. He was a disciple
right.
of Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. You've heard him.
Okay.
The power of
apostles.
That's
apostles
right. He was originator of the new era at that time in the 50s.
Right.
Okay, just like I'm telling you now, the Amish way of living is coming into reality, 21st, 22nd century. I'll let you finish.
Right. Well, all right. So they started off, you know, in a drive-in theater. Or the, you can't
right.
get no more simple because, number one, maintenance was super low. They didn't have to worry about a roof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because roofs cost a lot. I mean, a bunch of money, particularly when you got a structure like that. And maintenance
right.
is never the bigger the sanctuary, the more sanctuary. So the Amish and the Mennonite, they don't build church buildings. They don't get into the sanctuary building. Now they'll build one for you if you want to build one. And damn, they'll do it. But for themselves, they don't do that.
Simple.
They don't
simple.
Do that. It
no
keep
ego.
It super.
Yeah.
Simple.
No ego. No ego. That's what it is.
Right.
No
let's,
ego.
We got a call here. 773. Oh, I got to turn off the fan. 773, your
hello?
Mic is open. Yes,
Delmar. Hey, look, man, thank you so much for today's program. Sir, I missed your name. I want to say something. I've been preaching the gospel 50-plus years. What I found out, what you just said, is pure Bible. I was trained wrong. I had to fall out of the pulpit to discover that because we left the Old Testament out of the Christian faith, we are caught up in the devil process.
Mm-hmm.
Us abundance, something that God said, my people cannot serve me in abundance. And Christianity in America is all about abundance.
You're
the
right.
They're trying to get the money for the church and their
you're
lives.
Right. You're
the
right.
People are in abundance. But as you say, the Amish and all people, they're living the way the Old Testament says, stay out of debt, family, all that. So you're so cheap. I had to find out after 50-some years of doing wrong. And I had to fall out the pulpit for God to see my eye. What I've been doing, what I was taught. So I went to college, got my degree in the Bible, all this stuff. And I followed it for 50 years. I found out it was wrong. It's not Bible.
Well, but you learned. But you learned, though. You learned. You
yeah,
caught
oh,
on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I got a new ministry now, and it's going to correct this stuff. Same thing you're saying. I'll be in touch with you, some of your books. That's what I'm going to teach. Right, I can give you a book, chapter, and verse for it. But
well,
it's
yeah,
right in the Old Testament. But people don't know that because what they did, they divide the Bible into two parts, Old
uh-huh.
Testament and New Testament. That's
uh-huh.
a mistake. It's not divided. It's one book.
That's right.
But people
that's
got
right.
the idea we live in the New Testament. No, we live in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, if you understand
yeah,
it.
That's right.
But if you don't get you stuck in some church doctrine, you're going to miss out.
Well, you know what? You know why they break that into two? It's money. It's all about money. See?
Oh yeah, that's right.
But it's wrong, like you said. It is wrong. See? And I've seen a lot of church people, ministers, and I call them so-called preachers. Matter of fact, right as we speak, I'm working with my sister right now on a church that the leadership went for 20 years in the cesspool. Now. A lot of members in that process. And I told my sister, I said, now you see, but she listened to me, she straightened it up, and some of the members don't want change. They don't really want change.
Contrary
it's like
human nature.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And see, I've seen a lot of it over my lifetime. You what you're saying, I definitely agree with. But see, I was talking this 20 or 30 years ago. You know what my mother, and she's, bless her soul, she's going on now. She said, Junior, you can't say that about the churches. I said, why not? Why not?
It's true.
See, that's what I'm, if it's true, it's true, isn't it? Isn't that right?
That's right. That's right.
I'm glad you came forward and solidified that this morning. I'm glad you done that. I really appreciate you calling.
One thing I ask, sir. Remember, L.A. Herbert said, well, the Mennonite and the Amish, church to them is a seven-day process.
It's not
a building. And the
Christians
that we practice today, church is time and place. Go to
that's
the building,
right.
All holy, shouting all it.
I'm laughing at you because it's true. My grandfather, you know, years ago when I was growing up, my mother's always been a saint, you know, church going every Sunday, don't miss a Sunday. My grandfather pointedly asked her one time, and it really offended her. I never will forget this. He said, do it take all that church? See, my grandfather was half Chinese. My last name is Lee. And he didn't go to church, and he said, church is at home, it's in your soul, like you just said. I had to research 30 years of what you said, because I've studied all kind of philosophies, all kind of religions, and you know what I come to find out? I was just telling someone the other day about a heavenly going church person. I told this. I said, you know, all I need to know is the Ten Commandments and live by. They said, man, you right. I said, no, I mean, it could be a cult. That's why we got a lot of these cults, because people want to be led, but they don't realize they can be misled, you see? And that's the problem.
Please, one of the most powerful things you heard you say was that man and God is man. We are made in the image of God. And Satan is to get, once you get that dogged up,
yes. Yes.
Your mind belongs to his stuff. You see it every day. The whole stuff is nothing but the stuff of smoking mirrors, shine and stuff. And people are caught in the church are more caught in than anybody.
I've seen it too. I've seen that. I have. I've seen that. What you just said, I'll vouch for that. You're right. And see, that's why I preach and I try to tell people, find yourself and you'll find someone else. Okay.
Yeah, right.
And most people they don't want to find themselves. They're scared. They don't want to get out of the bubble. You know, sheep follow sheep. That's just a common thing. Create something. Make them follow what you created. That's what you're giving back to society. Something to live with and to think about. That's a subject I can talk about all day, really, you know.
Yes. Mr. Lee, thank you so much for sharing this morning, sir.
Yes.
I say through L.A., I want to get some of your books because I'm going to be using that. Is it better when you can say something someone else said? I like the fact you experienced it. You studied it.
Yes.
You know. You just copy somewhere. Thank you.
How for people that want to get a hold of your book, Strive to Arrive, how can they get that?
What they do... I can send them copies. What they do is easily. Let me give my email out. Then I'll give them. I'm on Amazon also. Now I have written 5 books, but I don't push them because I don't need to stress like I used to. That's what I was just telling you. You got to live simple. But let me give the email first. It's under L as in Larry, E as in Eat, L as in Larry. B as in boy, E as in eat, R as in Roy, T as in Tom, 1111@yahoo.com. And I can call it back and say it again. It's L, like in Larry, E as in eat, L as in Larry, B as in boy, E as in eat, R as in Roy, T as in Tom, 1111@yahoo.com. Also, you can find me on Amazon under my name, Elbert, it's E-L-B-E-R-T. That was what I gave you email spelled backwards, my name. L-E-E, it's Elbert Lee, L-E-E, E-L. B, and look for the book. It's the only one I got on there, but I can say I'm not motivated, not like I used to be. But is under strive to arrive. Believe me, that's my life story right there.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then what you do, if you want to know other books I have, email me and tell me what you, give me a link, and I'll send you some. I don't. Lee will tell you. I've been talking to Lee for 20, 30 years, Lee.
Since 1982 or 83, somewhere
around. That's right.
Here.
That long
yeah,
a period.
That's long. That's yeah. Yes, sir.
And he'll call me every now and then when he want to hear where I'm coming from. He'll call me, which I like that. See, every year he'll call me and want to know what's the latest thing coming up next year.
Yeah, I found out about Albert with there was a guy named a real estate guru, Bill Tycoon
Green
out of Mill Valley,
Tycoon.
California. And he had a newsletter which was like $2. $2 for the year. But, you know, he would send them out anytime he wanted to send them out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he told you that up front. So you know, Robert Allen, and out of all these so-called real estate gurus at the time, Albert was the only black one that I knew. I knew the whole
landscape. I was only black in the business, Lee. I'm not bragging.
Yes,
in
the business.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so Bill Green had mentioned him in, I guess it was the first book he wrote?
Yeah, How to Make Money.
Yeah, How to Make Money 24 Hours a Year. Right, right. So I contacted him, and we've been basically...
friends.
Of course, we're more in contact since we got the podcast. But Albert comes on here about at least twice a year. We have him on here at least twice.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was on here one time every week for about almost 2 months.
That's right.
Ellie.
And I would only do that for Lee. Anybody else? Pay me. You know what I mean? So
the reason why he's on here today now, the reason why he's on here today is because, last Friday, Elvin and I had a conversation, and he mentioned a book. Now, this might be the best book that I've heard from him as a recommendation. Okay. And that is, his books are good now, but this book, if you want some how-to information, last Friday afternoon. So if we go back on Friday, this time last Friday, because, you know, Elber was, I guess he and his wife were away in Kansas, something like that. But he recommended this book last Friday. I ordered it, and I got it last Sunday, which is Amish Enterprise.
Yeah.
That's the name of the book.
Uh-huh.
And it's by Donald Craybill, and Craybill is spelled K-R-A-Y-B-I-L-L, one word, Donald B. Craybill. And Stephen N. Nolt, N-O-L-T. So now, Albert, I have read all the book. I've you know, thumbed through it. But this is what I would say. This is our textbook here on this podcast. So, Albert, share with us why do you think Amish Enterprise, which people, that's the name of the book, it's called Amish Enterprise, From Plows to Profit. Why do you think people should go, you know, get a copy of this book? I've got my copy already.
Okay, like you reading out to me and to your audience, From Plows to Profits. That says it all right there. That's telling the society, if they're aware of it, they came from plows. I mean, drawing horse buggies, plowing the fields, but then they got to profits. And where the profits come in is that they learn how to do business, but within the family, no outsiders. In this book, when you keep reading it, Lee, you'll see some about advertisement. Have you ever seen Amish advertisements on the outside?
Never. Matter of fact, this book wasn't even written by Amish. They don't get. I haven't seen and I had one lady that grew up Amish on here. They don't write any how-to books. They don't write no get-rich-quick books.
Mm-mm.
They don't do no retreats where you can, you know. They don't do no fireworks. Matter of fact, like Yoder, Kansas, you're familiar with Yoder. I called their Chamber of Commerce, so they're, I'm going to have to actually travel there. You know what? And they don't market themselves that way.
They don't have to. I was just getting break. That's what I'm telling you, Lee. They figure word of mouth is enough, okay? And the way they figure word of mouth, that's really keeping it among themselves, see? They really don't want to go mainstream. They really don't. But what's happening right now, and your other audience I just talked to, your other member, you watch this. It's going to go mainstream because people are going to make it go mainstream. And like Lee said, they didn't write this book. But the person that, like we're talking about that was observing this book, was studying them, this is what they came up with. And to me, they're telling me that, hey, I'm living this. But they're trying to get the people aware. This is where it's at. It's not in all this luxury stuff and going into debt, buying expensive cars. They're doing it piece by piece. And that means debt-free. The Amish look at debt as a curse. That's what they look at it as. You know, we talk about slavery. And I just told your gentleman still listening, I hope.
Yeah.
We're talking about slavery. Don't you know we're in slavery when we're in reverse debt? How worse can it get?
That's bondage.
That's bondage. That's the key. You don't have control over your destiny. The destiny have control over you. Okay? And that
lender is surplus. The borrower is servant to the lender. That's the book.
That's right.
Slave to the lender. That's what it says.
And see, now what we're saying, the banks don't want to hear us say this.
No.
That's why we trillions of dollars in debt. You know what I mean?
Right.
And see, that's what I'm saying. It's not a good example. You know what I mean? You got to create your own example. You got to figure, well, I'm not going to stay in slavery. My parents grew up in it. But I'm not putting myself back into slavery. I call it financial slavery. That's what it is. That's
right.
Exactly what it is. And Lee is a good studier. He knows a lot. He's learned a lot.
You
and he motivates me at times to push him.
Well, another thing about now people can go online and you can fact check me. Look, just type in Mennonite communities or Amish communities, and essentially a lot of them have they bought a lot of farmland, and you can see their maps of this.
Mm-hmm.
The Mennonite have stuff like globally. I mean, the Mennonites are in United States, Ethiopia, India,
mm-hmm.
Congo,
mm-hmm.
in Africa, Canada, Indonesia, Germany, Paraguay, Kenya. The Amish came out of that. So a lot of them, we're not trying to tell people to go Amish or Mennonite. We're just saying
right.
Look at the economic models.
Yes. Think about it.
Look
right.
at the
I'm
economic models
right.
and their family model. You can dress the way you want to dress. We have another call here, I think it's Robin. 813, your mic is open.
Hello, Albert.
Hey, Robin, how you doing there? Long time no talk to you. Have you made your money yet?
Yeah, making money. Just starting to make the money now. We got the network now has 30 television stations, 17 radio stations. We got
that's good, Robin. I'm proud of you. Proud of you.
That we're developing into Maven Town. We've got a abiding safe housing.
Now, Robin, let me say this. Wait, listen to me, Robin. I'm gonna ask you a question. Since I've talked to you and Lee a long time ago, Can't you see what I've been saying is some of that can come true?
Yes. Yes. And you don't wait for the handout for somebody to give you something. Create your own opportunity.
There you go.
We are created. We are made in His image. Why don't we remember that we're created?
That's right. That's what's so sad. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, Robin.
Yeah.
That's right. And see, to me, the mind is God, because it's no other human, it's no other species have what we have on this earth. You know, the mind is a terrible thing in the waste, like the NCAA, whatever, the black caucus. They say that, but they don't live that, okay? The mind is a terrible thing to waste. And 97% of the people, they waste it. Okay?
Yes.
And that's what's so sad. That's what's so sad.
Yeah. So we thought about it, and then we came up with a plan, and the plan is in action.
Good. See, I'm proud of you. To me, Robin, what you're doing, you're making the world a better place. And seriously, I see all these wars and fights and going on overseas. You know where that come from? Basically, unhappiness with themselves. And that rubs off pretty fast. Next thing you know, you got a war. A war without controlling your mind. That's what you already lost. You lost already. Think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, you know, we have to guard our thoughts, be mindful of our thoughts. Why? Because so as a man thinks it, so
yes.
Is.
Yes, so be. Mm-hmm.
And so we really can't afford to allow ourselves to become bored.
Uh-huh. Stagnated.
Stagnated, tired, none of that. Keep yourself up like that is easy.
That's
why
right. That's right.
It's all about your own self. I mean, my goodness. Man,
that's
I'm
true. That's true. That's true, Robin. That's true. You know one thing, but you notice this. You notice what I'm getting ready to say, and you try it. You take a person you think you really know, maybe close to, just ask them this question. Can you look yourself in the mirror and feel good about yourself? You know what most of them going to say? They say you're crazy, okay? Because you're facing the obvious, you. You, if it's meant to be, it's up to me, okay? And most people don't believe that. They don't believe that, see? You know, that's my hardest part is convincing the people to let them know. What's your name on the other end, too? I'm talking to you also.
I'm Delmar.
Okay. You're great, man. I was going to say that most people, you know, we were put on this earth to be great people, to create things where people can consistently grow in the mind and in the future. That's the way I look at it. And if we don't do that, we lost. We didn't serve our genius purpose. We haven't. Society stole it from us, in essence, okay? And that's why I'm out here speaking the word. And I mentioned this to Lee. I got to give back to society because I've got a lot from society. And if you can't give back, you never got anything, okay? And that's what the Amish keep it in a sector where it's in the family. When the reason why they live that way, the Amish, it's a secret to them that they don't want no one else going bad in the family, getting away from their rules and progress and regulations that they have. It is a secret. I think it is. But that's why they don't get involved too much with the outside world. because they would have a mess. In essence, they would be. But I think that people are the smart people, the observant people, they're watching. They're watching. And pretty soon it is going to spread. And it's been over 100 some years.
It's going to be a reset in this country.
Yes, yes.
When it occurs, all this false stuff, fiat stuff going to crumble, and people are going to look for what's real. And
yes.
The army's going to be real because they are.
Yes, yes. Because we get lost in this material stuff. It's like, you know, I look at, I talk to Lee all the time about this. We look at a car. You go buy a brand new car. The minute you drive it off the lot, is it new? Uh-uh.
Nope.
Now, if we buy a house and build a house or whatever, that's positive. Because you got to have a place to live. And you got, and in the meantime, you sleeping every night. Your money making 24 hours a day while you sleep. That's part of my first book. And we don't realize we're sitting on a bank. If you own a home, you got a piece of America. But when I say own a home now, Lee's talking Amish, where it's no mortgages, but you still never own a home. It's hard for most people to understand what I'm saying. But I've worked in different phases of the real estate industry. All it does, if you don't have a mortgage, it makes you comfortable. You don't know, you don't have a monthly payment every month sticking over your head. Taxes come once or twice a year. That's the difference. But you better be ready to pay the taxes. Otherwise, you're going to lose the house still. But when you pay a mortgage off, you're looking for a peace of mind. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. So you got to look at it in a faith. But if you buy a car, just like you just throw a match on a property and burn it down. Because all you get is looked, and sometimes you're not even getting looked. Because nobody ain't concerned about a car if they especially got on their mind that they want to make it. They want to be financially secure at the end of their lives or in the middle part of their lives or in the early part of their lives. I've been through that. I'm telling you my own experience. What I'm saying is I lived it. I didn't read that in no book. I lived it. I used to drive Mercedes.
I've got an e-bike that I roll around in the city on, and everyone at the shop, from whether they're sitting there in another car or crossing the street, everyone's, nice bike. But I don't hear them hollering out, hey, nice car, okay, to anybody.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
they love my bicycle.
Yeah, but you know, that's the point. We have to get out of living out of illusions. Illusions will really lead you to things that later you will regret in life. And like I said, I personally went bankrupt numerous of times. But the reason why I went bankrupt, I didn't have no one to tell me what I'm telling you guys. I had to go through the worst part of it, okay? And some people never come back. You know, I was $300,000 in debt, roughly. Taxes, okay? But I didn't know what I know now, okay? That's why my first book, I filed bankruptcy, I talk about all that. And the point is, we're going to have some letdowns and setbacks. But like I tell people, keep pushing. When you have those setbacks, to me, you're right at the edge of accomplishing your goals, whatever it is. Because that is the test. I call it the test of time, okay? And if you can outrun time, you'll pass the test. And that's why a winner never quits and a quitter never wins. That's the difference, okay? And the thing is, I'd advise people to do all the studying if they haven't lived it, but I've lived it. I'm in my 70s. In my early 70s, okay? I'm just letting you know my age. I've lived it, okay? And what if I had to do it all over again, I would do it the way we're talking now, with the Amish way beginning. Because as I look at it, if I would have started with the Amish way, whoa, where would I be now? But my wife always tell me, she said, oh, but you're already successful. Not like I want to be. That's the drive. That's the drive that you got to have. You never satisfied with what you can accomplish, whatever it is. And most people get relaxed on their laurels, and they never get over. Okay? When you see a billionaire, you see a multimillionaire, they're driven. It ain't the money. It's not the money that they made. It's the drive to get there. And when you tell somebody that have been there and done that, they look at you and say, wow, they out of the picture here. They don't get it. Okay? And then they walk, then they holler around, oh, I'm so poor. I don't have no money to make it to next week. What a failure. I mean, I'm not talking about people deliberately. I'm just saying the mind state, because I grew up in that, okay? We used to have to borrow a cup of sugar from the next door neighbor to pay day. Would you want to live like that every day?
Well, you know, Albert, taking a page out of the Amish, the first thing, they don't get into car notes. Now, the Mennonites might, but Amish, they don't
That's
do car notes.
That's right. Amish is hard.
You know, which means they don't have to deal with a car note. They don't have to deal with insurance. They don't have to deal with taxes and tax.
Well, you know, Lee, I'm going to say that the Mennonites just put a little twist on the Amish way. But they I call them the spurgers of what they like. They get out like you just said. But if you want to be truly successful, you got to live the Amish way, or you got to think like the Amish. The Mennonites is a spinoff, just like you know the like the, our society. You got rich, you got the I call them the fakers. I call them the fakers. You know, live high, but you live high, but you running to be pay your rent next month. Or your house people. Those are, I call them pretenders. That's what they are, okay? Well, that's what the Mennonite is into the Amish. That's basically what it is. Going on, Lee. I've said what I have to say.
Right. Well, now, Elvin, now let's get into the book before we run out of time. The book, once again, is titled Amish Enterprise. So share with us your thoughts on that book.
Say that again, Lee.
The book Amish Enterprise by Crable and Nolte. Give us your thoughts on that book, and why do you think people need to purchase it?
Excuse me.
Or read it.
Very good question. Most people have heard of the Bible, which they should be. That's an international, worldwide book. Your customer there was talking about a client. Well, the Amish Enterprise. From plows to profit. It's the way of living, and it's all in this one book. Like I told you before, Lee, you don't have to read no other books. Just study that. And it will show you the way they live. And to me, this book I bought back in Yoder, Kansas. My wife used to live back there in Yoder, Kansas. I didn't find this on no bookstore at the time. Lee found it, but in the time it wasn't even existing 20 or 30 years ago. You didn't see that on no internet, okay? So I bought this book and I read it. And I also, another book, I'm going to name it. It's called, just a minute, The History of the Amish. Did you ever get that, Lee? The History of the Amish.
No, I haven't picked it.
Okay, that book.
No, I haven't picked that one up yet. I'll look it up. History of the Amish.
But those two books I'm mentioning right now, that's the only thing I ever have, I ever read. But I've seen it by actually being in certain places back there. For like I tell you personally, Lee, when we talk, I've had breakfast at those places. The breakfast, the food is very much like blacks now. I'm not going to say it's not. They have you have to watch their eating style on certain things, but they make homemade pies and stuff like that. They kill their pigs and everything, hogs, just like we grew up. They do all that. But what I'm saying is, what you don't want, don't accept that, okay? But take what's going to make you realize, wow, this is something that I got to consider. And see, another thing I've heard people tell me, friends and people I associate with, man, you don't have no TV. You won't have no TV. No, don't cut that out your life. I'm not saying go away from the TV, but just streamline your living style to what works for you. And you said it earlier, Lee. You're right. But what I'm doing and trying to do is show the people it's a better and simpler way to live. Because stress will kill you. I keep stressing that. Stress will kill you. We kill ourselves with stress because we want to keep up with the Joneses. Find your niche and go forward with it, whatever it is. And the thing is, the book, the Amish Enterprise, because I'm a business person, so that's the first book I bought. I want to know how do they live financially. And that's why I was reading the article in there. I brought up, I said, wow, you look at us right now, everything we do, advertisement, it's all through the media, isn't that correct? Internets and stuff like that. They don't do all that. They go by word of mouth. That's what I read in the book. And they said the reason why they go by word in the mouth, by the mouth, they don't want people in their sector outside of it. It's like a commune, a community situation. And they figure who buy for them, from them, I buy from them. I buy wallets. Like I told you before, I bought off eBay. They're big on eBay, very big. But you wouldn't know that unless you really follow them on certain things. Like in Yoder, they have a huge gift shop in Yoder. You think they have any debt on that? They don't owe nothing on that debt, on that shop. They even got their hog processing right next to it. I've seen that. They got their craft shops all inside of the regular shop. Everything you see on Yoder's lot, that shop, debt-free, okay? And what showed me all of that was you'll never know that. What I'm saying, if you never research that, you'll never know that. You will never know that because they're not going to put it out there. Like you see people in the United States, they got everything they've done on the Internet. You don't see that. They have stuff on the Internet, but it's certain things they sell. And another thing, what I notice about them on eBay, they sell high-class stuff, but it don't cost them nothing. They sell alligator wallets, all kind of hides, different expensive hides of wallets they sell. But that stuff that they went out there and they created themselves. They didn't buy that from no manufacturer or no wholesaler. They created that. You need to check that out sometime. When you get time, look, go to eBay and look at going to Amish products. You'll be surprised. I've had them tell me when I've ordered two or three things at a time, they send me out a card saying, thank you, we want to see you back. They make it personal. That's how they survive. It's not just like a Ferris wheel or a speed thing where you just somebody buy you, forget it. I'm going to the next. They don't look at it that way. They take the purchase that you buy from them serious, okay? Serious. And that means a lot too to the average person. You don't get that kind of attention. You know, you're on a trip.
Yeah, they have excellent customer service.
Yes. Yes.
And now let me attempt to give people an optic. Now, because a lot of people, you know, when you hear of high income people, you might think of some people might think of a professional basketball player, football player, something like that. Amish, not all Amish families, but many Amish families have wealth that surpass a lot of these high-profile athletes.
Oh, you got billionaires out there.
But the thing is, exactly, the thing is, but they don't flash. In other words, they're not, they'll go for a horse and buggy, or you even have Amish and Mennonites now that are doing like Robin, that they ride electric bikes.
Mm-hmm.
They're not buying Bentleys, they're not buying Maybachs, Bugattis. Rosewood, they're not into Cadillacs. They don't do that.
You'll see a lot of them on eBay.
They don't do any of
that. No, they don't do that.
Right, and like you said, they don't buy a house that's, I mean, they don't buy mansions or nothing like that. Like, and they when they build debt-free.
Exactly.
Okay, because, like, there's a documentary, I don't know if it's still on Netflix, called Broke. 60% of the players who retire from the National Basketball Association, and some of these people have made anywhere from $25 million to $100 million in their career.
And they're broke.
That's a lot of money. And 5 years out, 60 months out, they are broke.
That's the way it goes.
That's over half the league.
All that money.
But you won't catch the Amish or the Mennonites at the welfare office.
I've learned,
Listen, one more thing. I hope you just caught this. In the Bible, God made four seasons. You're only supposed to work three of them. The idea of working 12 months a year is not biblical. That's man-made. It's slavery.
That's right.
You talk about getting stressed. The only thing my dad taught was you have to work year-round to live in the city, the lifestyle. So I grew up.
That's true.
We
That's
worked
true.
9 months, and the third month we spent that time resting and recuperating. Brain went back out to work.
That's true. You know, what you just said, a statement, I read a book. He's passed on. His name. You ever heard of Jim Rohn? Jim Rohn?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He talked about four seasons. He talked about that. I got the book.
Yeah.
And see, and that's true. Like you said, you know, and when you made a point, when most people that live in the United States and they buy a home, or even if they rent, it's even worse. But if they buy a home, you're going to pay a half, 50% at least on that right to live in a house paying the mortgage. If you have a mortgage, you're going to pay that. And then you got to worry about your property taxes. Your property tax is going to be at least three-fourths of the value of your home. I was in the business, too. I was an appraiser. That's why I can talk. I'm an ex-appraiser, and I did that for 40 years, my wife and I. And that's the thing. See, the thing is, what you need to be shooting for is the equity in the house as time goes. But don't put yourself in a mortgage situation. You will never be able to enjoy the equity because the bank's going to take it. You don't want to be in that vulnerable position. And most people are.
The bank or the local taxing authority will take it,
yeah,
either one of the two.
That's
and throw
right.
in code enforcement, depending on what city you live in.
That's right. So you see what I'm saying is you'll never own the home, believe me. You'll own it in your name, but per se, the city or wherever we live can actually have the control of everything. The mortgage is, the banks have a control of the mortgage. They want to get their interest off that mortgage. And I had a buddy of mine, like I told you a while back, Lee, came from Lebanon, a friend of mine, 10 years ago or longer. He never used money to build. He was a builder. And he had friends that they would all pool their money together, just similar to the Amish. And they would build houses, and they would sell the house, and they would split the profits. But he told me one thing I never forgot. He said, Albert, you borrow that loan on that house, maybe $90,000 or $100,000, and that was at that time now. He said, you're going to pay $300,000 or $400,000 back when you pay it off. And he said, that interest, you could be putting it somewhere else in your own pocket. It's true. That's true. And he said, we don't build houses with debt. But see, he was living that way indirectly. He was Lebanese. That's where he's from. And they used to build 5 or 10 houses at a time, paid for. But he would never build no more than those houses that they can pay cash for. He didn't want no bank loans or nothing like that. Because when he built my house for me, he built me a house that I lived in for 5, 10 years. And that's when he told me, he said, man, you shouldn't have no mortgages on no house. I said, why, Edmund, why? I said, I'm leveraging what I'm doing. He said, yeah, but you can get caught up in that leverage. And most people did. Am I right, Lee? Am I right?
Yeah, yeah, you're correct. Absolutely correct. I had myself muted. Yeah,
what
you're
are you
right.
doing? You in heavy thinking right now, ain't you?
Well, I often take notes. I often take notes during these podcasts.
Yeah.
So I mute the mic so you won't hear my finger.
Well, you're doing the right thing. I'm saying, where's Robin at? She's still there?
Robin's still there.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm still here.
Yeah.
Come on, run it down on me. Run your progress down on me right there.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go
yeah,
ahead.
Robin's a millionaire.
I believe it.
Yeah.
That's why I asked it. Why are you a millionaire, Robin? Why are you? Why are you a millionaire? Tell me. Tell the public.
No, no, I said, no, millionaire. That's her coin term.
Oh, millionaire. Oh, okay. You're not.
No, no.
All right.
Robin, explain what a millionaire is.
Neil, a millionaire is a person that is very successful and prosperous without necessarily relying on money to do so.
Right.
Okay.
Any way you want to take it, Robert.
You use what you have. See, because it's the blessings of the Lord maketh
mm-hmm.
rich,
mm-hmm.
not
right.
money.
Right.
So if you're chasing money, you're just always going to be chasing around, what, paper? Right?
Oh, you got it down, Robin. You got it. You got it down.
So
12 months a year.
You create opportunities. So
That's wealth right there.
And knowledge is power. Wisdom is power. So,
yes, that's right. That's right.
You create your ideals, you get a vision, you develop it, and you go. And you don't take it to your friends and your family. And
I was going to ask you, Robin, I'm cutting in, but what do your friends, you just answered, what do your friends think about that?
They're not impressed. They don't see any value or anything, okay, but when I make it big, when I hit a lick, when I become mm-hmm. successful, then they're, oh, we go way back. I knew you could do it. I know. But if I falter along the way, if I stumble, if I need a little help, if I have a setback, fall back, need the help
mm-hmm.
getting up,
mm-hmm.
Well, see, that's why you shouldn't be wasting your time. oh, Lord.
You know, I'm going to do a book on that eventually about what people, the after effects of success. That's part of it right there, see? People don't want to go there. They don't want to go there, Robin.
But
you see that?
But they want to go up and still go to a job that's paying them money. Employment today is modern slavery.
That's right. The paycheck is the whip. That's right, Robin.
Okay?
That's right. I agree with you. See, and that's the thing, what I was saying earlier. Most people can't get out of their funk, 97% of the population. You know,
mm-hmm.
again, they like to follow the sheep. That's what they like to do, okay? The Amish don't follow the sheep. They follow their dreams and their ideas. That's the difference, too.
Mm-hmm.
And see, that's the separation of why they where they're at and why we are, most of us, where we're at, in the gutter. And you know, if we can ever find ourselves like you're talking, Robin, we'd be more free. You got to become free. And what I mean by become free, you got to shake all the unnecessary stress that we don't need.
And the first thing we need to drop is all the education. So watch this.
Yeah, it's not about that. It's not all about
that. Listen to people, listen to this closely. Academic is studying information
for no content or purpose. That's right.
And we send our children to academies for 13 to 15 years because they're getting them an early education now.
And what do they,
What do they
do?
No practical, all that information has no practical intent or purpose.
you know what I call them, Robin? You know what I call those people? educated fools, okay?
Yeah.
And that's the sad part. I've seen a lot of them. I got family members like that. They got doctorate degrees. They don't even have a job, per se, okay? And so my mother used to always say this. You can go to school and think you know it all, but when you come down to surviving, can you survive? And most of the people that I've seen like this, I call them nerds to the point they never, ever get over, okay? They don't see it. They think the education, that's why I said earlier on the show, if you was listening, my mother went to the sixth grade. She was a genius because she had premonition on things that most people would never think of. All the neighborhood would always come to my mother for information. And the point is, it's not so much the education. It's what's running the education, and that's the mind. The mind is a powerful instrument. I can't say that enough. You can do anything you want to do if you want it bad enough and you put it in your mind. I've been there, done that. If I can tell you what I'm saying to you, Robert, and the audience there, I've been there. I've done that. I don't speak from reading books. I'm speaking for a worldwide life of living it over the years. And what I found out at the end, happiness is you, what you think about your life. It has nothing to do with nobody else. You don't care about what nobody else think about you.
Ms. Lee, would you agree the purpose of the education system is to create a workforce?
Yes, that's all. That's
all. Yeah.
That's right.
Somebody to be slaves, right? In the schools to learn how to do that.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
No, you're absolutely right, Delmar. Matter of fact, Robert Kiyosaki's very first book before he got into the Rich Dad series is titled If You Want to Be Rich and Happy, Don't Go to School with a Question Mark. And that, you're right, that book exposes exactly what you just said. The educational system, and particularly the state-funded education, public schools, state universities, they are designed to train a workforce.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, people are going to college or universities, and they're going to, when they get a job at IBM or wherever they get the job at, they're going to work making somebody else or else's family rich. Whereas the Amish and the Mennonites and the Hutterites, they work in the family business to make their families rich.
That's right.
Even
that's
slaves, even former slaves. And in 1863 and 1865, former slaves, the first 50 or 60 years out of slavery, the blacks that caught on to it, the sharecroppers, they were working to make themselves rich. But with the state-funded education, that is designed for you to work for either work for the state or work for Walmart's family. None of Sam Walton's children. You will never catch them working a state job. It's not going to happen.
But that's why I said earlier. The point what you just brought up, education is just an exposure to the other side of life. But you don't need education to go forward and be successful. Excuse expression. It's the mind that's got to be function to realize you can function on one. Look at Ray Kroc. That's a perfect example. Ray Kroc, Grinding It Out. Read the book called Grinding It Out. He went to the sixth grade, created a monument with McDonald's drive-in. And you know what he did? He did not own that McDonald's originally. He was a salesman selling straws and stuff to that McDonald's in Santa Barbara, California. That's where it started. But
he sold milkshake machines. He sold
machines. That's right. But he had a vision. He's in his mind, he knew that he can take that McDonald's franchise around the world. And that's what he did. But now he only had a sixth grade education. Look at Thomas Edison. Great inventor, but never finished college or high school. Now, don't that prove that it's not all, well, Robin said it. It's not all about education. It's how you educate your mind. That's the difference right there. The mind absorbs whatever you want to produce.
Well,
it's not education.
What's his name? Carter G. Woodson wrote a book. It's a classic. It was published in 1933, but if you read it, you would swear it was written today. It's called The Miseducation of the Negro. But
yeah,
you can
right.
also
yep.
say that book is the miseducation of everybody, regardless of color or race.
Right.
Because, like we just established, state-funded education from first grade to even the PhD level, state-funded education is designed essentially for you to go in the workforce and work for somebody else's
not make no money for yourself. Not making money for yourself. I
no,
think what you just said, that scares, you know, that scares a lot of, I noticed when I was in college, when you start talking about, this is a true story to what I'm saying. I was in college, a freshman year in college, Lee, and audience there. You know, I studied more on the outside of businesses than I did in the college and club courses. They were boring. They were boring to me. Boring. It wasn't what I wanted to do, but I know I had to conform to get to where I'm at, just to show a piece of paper. But I never used that piece of paper, believe it or not. I've got to where I am through ideas and drive. I'm talking from my experience. That education was just there to show the other person, well, they might have a little bit of sense. It's not all about sense. It's the brain power. Okay? And see, that's what I've learned. I've been on both sides of the streets. And what I've found out in my experimentations, if you got both of them, it's strong. You're dynamite. But if you have one, you can be dynamite. Not education, though, now. You're not educated to make money. They don't teach that. See?
Okay, I was going to ask that question. In all your years of college and education getting and all of that, did any of those instructors or courses teach you, even in business classes, did any of them teach you how to create a business?
No. You know why?
Okay.
No, they didn't, Robin, because they didn't know how to create. They were trained to look at the books, teach you what they know in the book. They've read those books hundreds of times because they've had courses over the years. So that's not creative. No, it's not creation. What a mind that can create, I call that genius. That's what it is. Okay? And most people don't have that. Creation is the future of the world. It's development of new ideas. We wouldn't have things we have now, if no one never thought of it. A thought is things. You got to remember that now. A thought is things. Okay. The great Napoleon Hill even said that. See. And most people don't follow. They can read. They can read that book 100 times, but never understand what it means. Okay.
A thought is your life.
That's right.
So as a man thinks, so is he. We cannot afford to become bored, tired.
Mm-hmm.
None of that. It will lead to your own destruction.
There you
Guard
go.
Your
there
thoughts.
You go.
Make
there
your thoughts
go.
Deliberate. Do not let
yeah.
your thoughts become idle.
Well, you become
Don't
stagnated.
Do it.
You become stagnated.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And that's
yeah,
scary.
So.
That should be scary to the person that want to get ahead, you know, make their lives a better life for their families and stuff like that. You can't, it's just like, really, when you think different life from that, think about this. You live in a cult life because you're following what everybody else thinks. And it's an excuse not to do anything great. I'd rather try and fail than to not try and be safe, okay? And that's the way, America was built on that idea. And, you know, like Robert Shuler said, you mentioned his name earlier, Lee. Robert Shuler said he'd rather fail and try and fail and not fail and be safe. Think about that. And see, Amish is a new way of thinking, but it's old to them. But it is new to you, to us, because whoever had the brain to study that, tell me, what do you think, Lee? You answer that question. Or Robin, you answer that question.
So what was, who does what? I'm sorry.
Who have the brain to think of studying something that's going to make them more prosperous or satisfied in life, better than where they've been? Better than where they've been, okay?
Well, if you're struggling to go broke, you'll be motivated to study.
That's right.
Well, I mean, for instance, you know, there's a lot of people that let's say they go to the college route. So they're 4 years there, and they're looking at that's their ticket to prosperity or a comfortable life.
So they
graduate and then they find out, well, you know what, maybe I need to go back to school and get a master's degree. So they go back and get a master's degree, and they're still broke. And they said, well, maybe I'll join Amway or Mary Kay, and that'll work. And, you know, so it
– Well, it does.
You know,
work.
You sort of
got
to figure it out.
That's the key.
But what I like about the Amish, because people that are 8 years old probably have heard of Amish in a history lesson.
Oh, yeah, Lee, they grow up with that, man.
If I had to do it, like, particularly if I had kids – I mean, because, all right, Amish go to academic school grades 1 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's it. From what we call ninth grade, their 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds, that's when they start learning officially learning the family business.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Essentially, a 17 or 18-year-old Amish person, male or female, has more business acumen and experience than somebody who has an MBA from Harvard or Yale University.
That's a fact.
Because the person who went to Harvard, they're just dealing with books and memorization and passing tests.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
It's true.
And speaking of Harvard or Yale, like with Harvard, Bill Gates dropped out of Harvard.
Yes, that's
like
right.
With his first year, and Mark Zuckerberg, he dropped out after the first semester.
Right. It wasn't about education. No, it wasn't, see. But now, the reason why I got my degree is because at that time, and I'm going to say this, I was insecure because I had no work experience. I was really just drifting until I was 18 years old because my mother spoiled us, my brother and I, which he passed on now. My younger brother, we were five siblings in the family. The girls, she got hard down on the girls, but the boys she pampered. And when I was 18 years old, I noticed that it wasn't a point to say, I like being here. No, I was running to get out of there, because destiny showed me that I was not going to be anything in life. If I would have stayed there, I could have been dead or on the streets like the people I grew up around. So I was running to get out. That's one of the reasons why I think I got married at 19, because I was looking for a better future. And that had nothing to do with no education. I'm just going to be true with you. It was wanting to do better, okay? Now, getting back to the Amish book, now let me go to an area in the book. Collecting debts. You read that part, Lee, about the Amish? Collecting debt?
No, I haven't read that yet.
The more troubling issue for Amish entrepreneurs concerned the degree of force they will use in collecting bad debt. During the 1980s, a number of businesses developed what one observer called a major problem with uncollected bills. And it says, knowing that the Amish do not sue, you know they don't sue, do you? Amish do not sue, some non-Amish begin systematic.
You're right. I did pick that up in the book. The Amish, amongst each other, they do not use the legal system.
Yes.
They don't do it.
Okay.
Because the legal system can be very expensive.
And they know that. Mm-hmm. They
know
that.
You know what? Really, the only people that win in the legal system are lawyers and the court system. Because the bankruptcy court, landlord-tenant court, housing court, those are local agencies to make money for the municipality in which they are in.
Yes, that's why they stay out of court.
They stay out of court.
That's smart. That's very smart when you look at that, okay? Because, again, go ahead on. I mean, it excites me to talk about
it. Well, real quick before we go to Delmar. The origin of this show, It's My House. It was, I had a house sitter. I got a house in D.C.,
mm-hmm.
And so I had somebody that I knew that they were headed towards a shelter there, and they had like a kid like 7 years old at the time, 8 years old, somewhere like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on my way to Europe in 2 or 3 days. So I said, well, look, I want somebody that I know in the house. So I said, look, all you need to do is you don't have to pay me any rent. Just take care of, the utilities, the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to pay me a penny. So, at that time, I was living in Europe like 6 months out of the year for 5 years. So, after 2 years, I say, all right, I need the house back. And they didn't want to get, long story short, they actually tried to take the house. So, the way they tried to do it is they went through, first, because I live in Florida mostly, the house in Washington, I'm 1,000 miles away. So, they went to the police at first. The police wouldn't file no charges against me. Then
you
they filed it in
that,
court.
Yeah, you told
the
me.
Judge threw out the case. And then they found they went to some kind of neighborhood legal services, and then they got them through. And then I had to, I'm up there commuting between here. Sometimes I go up there, that's a lot of, commuting. I spent $20,000 on commuting. All right, my mother, who was living at the time, my mother had a great suggestion. Now, because this person's father was a general contractor. This woman's father built houses. Her brother-in-law, who was also a contractor, he was from Ecuador, someplace like that, originally.
Uh-huh,
he was married to a sister.
Uh-huh.
He built houses. So my mother gave me a message, gave her, and said, look, why? And she was an administrative assistant, a secretary, and a very good one from what I heard.
Uh-huh,
so she
uh-huh.
said, to ask, suggest to her, get her dad and her brother-in-law to build her a house. That's free.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and then she run the business and do that for other people. I got cussed out behind that.
Well, you learned something. You taught her something, too.
And that gave birth eventually to It's My House, the podcast we're on right now.
Yeah, you told me that story.
So, but we got a ministry going that we just started. We announced it on, I think, Monday, Robin. Abiding Faith Housing Ministries, where we're taking a page out of Isaiah 65:21. We're going to be teaching people how to build their own house
and
live in it.
That's a need. But let me ask you this question, Lito. When your mother told you to tell her to build her own house, what was the philosophy?
Yeah, have her dad and her brother-in-law build her a house.
But
which
what
I thought was an excellent idea.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. That's genius. But what did your mother see in that? Why did she say that? What was the purpose?
I don't know. The other thing that my mother said behind that was, because, see, she was headed towards it. Now, how she got in the house was she had gotten kicked out of her sister and brother-in-law's house. And this particular brother-in-law was also a general contractor. My mother also told me that if a person can't live on their mama's couch, you don't want to deal with that person. You don't want to, you know. Now, this is caused, not, this is, I'm in hell's fire at this time, I'm hearing this. But, so because she couldn't live with, she couldn't go, she had another, she had two sisters that she couldn't live with.
Well,
she had
yeah,
a dad
problem.
She couldn't live with. Her mother, she couldn't live at her house and chill. So there were five blood relatives that she, and I, you know what, I just overlooked all of that because I said, well, I never
well, we
had any
do.
Problems with that
we,
person.
We usually do. We usually do overlook things like that. That's what
right.
put me in eviction. That's what put me in eviction business because I overlooked things when I had fourplexes and eightplexes. I had this person, and that I don't know if I ever told you the story of why how I got into doing evictions. I was renting a property to this lady, and I had just bought the units, and she was there. She was always a deadbeat. We're living there. And when I came to collect the rent, my manager I had at the time, she always would say she paid the rent. She paid the rent. So I talked to a person that lived in the other units that I had. They said, well, she's been here a long time. And she, what she does, she'll go to 4 or 5 months through the eviction process. And the day before the police come out, she'll move to another place. She did that 4 times a year. 4 times a year. She lived rent-free, when you think about it, see. And but the point is, I said myself, no, she ain't going to take advantage of me like this. So I had a manager. I taught him how to do evictions. That's how we created eviction business. See, if something good came out of that, but look what I had to go through, okay? And she had a game. She would always tell people, the managers, oh, I paid him last month. And they wouldn't question that. And she would live 3 or 4 months, and she'd get 3-day notice served on her. Hey, what does she care? She's going to move out in 5 months.
And that's another thing about, and see, that's why I rather, I really don't want to get in the rental business anymore. I really, you know what, look.
I'll
teach you how, and that's where we have, like I say, we have, matter of fact, our first tour will be September the 9th, which is next month.
Nice,
that's on a Saturday, here in Florida.
Nice.
But the name of it is Abiding Faith Housing Ministries, okay?
That's
and
me.
Anybody
that's
who's me. Interested in if you're interested in earning anywhere from $200 to $1,000 a weekend,
it's pretty
being
good.
One of our
pretty
tour
good.
Guides on this, we'll train you in that, okay? We're going to go through this every week.
Yeah, what's involved in that? What do you do? What do you train?
Well,
teach?
Well, first thing, everything we're dealing with is in a rural location. We don't do anything
uh-huh.
in the city.
Uh-huh.
So we train them about how to recognize, you know, matter of fact, one of the courses that we have is your first 40 acres. So we train you on how to, you know, where to go look at property, why it's less more economical to get property in a rural area versus in a major
mm-hmm.
city.
Mm-hmm.
The particular profit centers and all that. And then if you're interested in we'll teach people how to build their own. Now, we do tiny houses, but you'll learn
big.
The fundamentals
that's
with tiny houses. So essentially, we try to get as close as the Amish and Mennonite as possible. So we teach you how to build your own debt-free house.
That's the
and
key.
Using social capital. Using social capital. So in other words, if, for instance, I need a house built, okay, Albert, would you help me build a house? Robin, would you help me build? Delma, would you help me build a house? People in the audience, would you help me build a house? And then in return, you know, when you're ready to build your house, you don't have to pay me anything because that's using social capital.
Right, trading off. That's right.
Because a lot
that's
of people totally – now, in order to Fred Rerun Bear, we were friends when he was living. Rerun on a TV show, What's Happening? He had his thing that he went by. Relationships are more important than money.
That's right.
Okay.
Right.
Although
right.
you might be able to convert those relationships. So if this is what the Amish and the Mennonite do. So you if you finance your home using social capital, Okay, and I'm not going to play it today because we're almost out of time. It's the Nine Friends audio that I played a gazillion times. It, you know, how did these people, you know, and this story was, it could be anybody. They were Mexican, but it could be anybody. Nine pickup trucks showed up. So you got to figure there were at least two people per pickup truck. Nine times two is 18. So this guy had 18 friends come over, and they came over with their refreshments and their water, maybe beer, pizza, food or whatever. And they fixed up a house that had been vacant and run down for years. They fixed it up to be brand new in less than 12 hours.
Wow.
That's,
boy, that's
social
nice.
Capital.
That's nice.
But that's the same thing that the Amish do, that the Mennonite do.
Yeah, they
I mean,
do.
You don't have
they
to be
do.
Amish or Mennonite.
No,
so,
you don't.
So with abiding faith, housing ministry, we'll be teaching people. So I'd rather teach you how to build your own house.
Right.
Than rent
to
you.
Smart. That's right. That's right. That's help. Now, that's helping a person. I can see the reason in me that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it's not on you. You're not suffering while you're helping them. That's
no,
the medium.
No,
right.
And on top of it, so, and they're going to have a whole new mindset. As a Pleasant Stephens, who used to be on here on a regular, they have a vested interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
They have a vested interest in it. So, and if they decide to rent it out, okay, then, you know, their thinking's going to be different. But the person who cussed me out at that suggestion, okay, now because you got to think about this, we have been indoctrinated by the state. By the church, and by the state-sponsored educational system, for 12 years on work for somebody else, work for somebody else.
Yeah.
It's drilled into our, you know.
That's
so
sad.
Sad. You know, you know what? A person who was a Kunta Kinte. Who was bought in this country at 17 years old, he was more educated on how to feed himself by growing his own food and building his own hut more than the average person in 2023 who just graduated with an MBA from Harvard University.
Well,
what's wrong
point.
With that picture?
That's right. It's a good point. But I'm going to show you. It's the drive.
Delmar,
you
had a comment? Delmar,
yeah,
you had a comment?
And one, right about the Amish, not suing. The scriptures teach that Christians should never take each other to court. They take the loss. That's one point. You never sue. Christians never take one another to court. You just take the law. The other point about the education, I was sitting in Australia for a while, and my host taught me, and he's a young son who had it. Over there, when you finish high school, 12 years, unless you go into a profession like law, medicine, something, that's the only reason you go into a higher education.
Right.
Our situation here is you got to get an LSE, you got to get a master's and PhD just to make a living. It's a kind of ripoff. That's what it's all about. Another thing I learned, most people, they say, after they get a college degree and get a job, they function at an eighth grade level.
I believe that.
All the education stuff is just money. Be paying these folks, make a bunch of money off of training people to work for somebody else. But again, other countries say, no, you don't need that. You have to be a lawyer or a doctor, some other profession. 12 years are all you need to make a living.
But you know what you just said, even a doctor or a lawyer, they're working for somebody else. You know what?
Yeah.
You know what's why I say that? Because they're running something by themselves, and if they get sick or can't work no more, who takes care of them? You gotta have a business that works 24/7, whether you're there or not. That's what true wealth is. Something that goes on and
on.
Yeah,
we had a guest on yesterday. He's a returning citizen, ex-offender. And he runs his corner store. It's highly automated.
He's not there all the time, see? The reason.
Right.
And a true wealthy person, and true to their being, they don't have to depend on the next day. Am I going to be well tomorrow? Can I go to work tomorrow? Work is something you create, like I was telling you earlier, and it's assets in essence. Money is made in assets, not wages. That's a fact, okay? You can see high-paying doctors, they're making $500,000 a year and they're broke the next year. But if you take that $500,000 and put it, go ahead on.
Hold on, let me cut in real quick. Now, because it seems like we're beating up on the education system. I think we got a college professor on the line now. He taught college on a university level. We went to school together in Texas. So
okay.
If he would like to, Willie, just press one if you want to chime in on it. Now let me put this out here as a plus for state-sponsored education. All right, knowing what I know now, okay, if I had to do 4 years of college over again, I would have known the value of networking more than I did when I was actually in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also be looking at, emerging industries. As a matter of fact, let me share this story with you. My major in college was mass communication, electronic media.
Mm-hmm.
So when I graduated, I went back home. Now, I went to school. My school was in Canyon, Texas, all right, in the panhandle of Texas. And
mm-hmm.
Canyon might have maybe 14,000 people that are there today. So it's a small town. It's a small college town, all right. So, when I went there, there was no such thing, because I'm originally from Washington, D.C. So when I
mm-hmm.
left... when I graduated from high school in 1976, there was no such thing in Washington, D.C., metro area, or Baltimore, Maryland, as cable television. I had never heard of the term until I got to West Canyon, Texas, and they had cable television. Now, I graduated
mm-hmm.
in 1980, and they still didn't have cable television in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
D.C. was like one of the last places on. So, now... So I was looking for a job in mass comm. I was going through the white pages, and I saw the name of this company. And, I went up to Capitol Hill, and the name of the company was Gap Communications. I think the lady, her name was Diana Winthrop or something like that. She passed on. But anyway, so she gave me a contact that she had, and it was in the Georgetown section of Washington, D.C., and this particular business was located, you had to go through the alley. There was no front entrance to the building. These people, their rent schedule delegated them to the rear of the building, down the stairs, to this one-room office.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There was one employee. All right. Now, knowing what I know now, I would have volunteered for this and worked for nothing for this particular organization. The name of the organization was CNN.
Really?
That's why I would say I would tell college students today, if you're going to go to college, your most valuable skill set is networking and developing and maintaining relationships. Look at emerging industries, look at small companies, and
mm-hmm.
think 5, 10, 15, 20, if you can, 30 years out.
That's right.
Because the person that you're sitting in classroom today might be Mark Zuckerberg or might be Bill Gates.
That's right. That's right.
You just never know.
It's
I remember CNN when they had an office off the alley.
Yeah, Glenn Turner. I remember Glenn Turner.
You go to
Turner.
D.C. now.
Yeah.
They got a big office with floors and everything.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I would recommend that. It's all over the nation.
Yeah, well, they're global.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're global. We got another caller here. 309 area code. Your mic is open. 309.
Good morning,
your
LA, Robin. Yes, sir. I just was able to get on. Can you hear me? This is Chris Collins. All right, cool. I was listening from Grasshopper, but for some reason, I don't know if it's showing up on the switchboard or not. So I switched over to another phone because I've been really enjoying this. And very nice to meet you, with guests here today.
Albert, yeah, Albert.
Yeah,
good.
Glad to meet you. Glad to meet you as well.
Albert. Man, you, you're definitely a knowledgeable person, and I love the humbleness of you. It's been a very,
thank you.
Very nice
thank
pleasure
you.
To,
thank
to
you.
Sit here and listen.
Yeah, I was raised. I was raised humble. I'm cutting in on you. Go ahead on. I'm listening to you.
I appreciate it. You know, that's the thing. We kind of all need to humble back a little bit.
Yes, and that's the problem. See, we have too many people of us. We get a little dime. They don't want to share it. You know what I mean? But I taught my kids. I got three children. I got two boys and one girl. I taught my kids, like you just brought up earlier, don't forget where you came from, okay? And my mother used to bring that up to us when we were growing up. She said, you know, most people fail in life because they forget about the beginning, the foundation. And we were talking about, I had a subject about a couple of months on what we're talking about right now. My son is an attorney up in the Bay Area. He's a, you know, he works for the state. Then he runs his own, but he got a doctorate degree in law. But then my wife, his wife went to my high school, same high school, Washington Union in Easton, the rural area. And they both worked, and she did do well together. But my son runs a side business called Passing Down. It's a 7-on-7, matter of fact. He started that before, I can't think of the football player, just retired. He's doing it now. But my son told me this one thing, and it made me feel good. He said, Dad, you know one thing? You taught us we can communicate with anyone, whatever they are. People are people. And I've had relatives get doctor's degrees. They stuck up. They don't want to speak to people. Those are the ones that fail because they're cutting the main thing out is socializing, okay? And that's why I always said I don't care what I've done in life, and I've done quite a bit, but I'm not on the ego, because what I've done speaks for itself. And I'm glad you called in and say tell me that. I'm very happy to hear that. And it's college is not everything. Like that's why I brought it up. But it's for the people that can't help themselves. But it's not people to stay in that slump. I don't know what you think about it, but I've been teaching a lot of growth.
Well, you know what, YouTube is an educational disruptor because, I mean, I'm sure all of us on here, we haven't been able to do something. You know, I call it YouTube, not only me, but a lot of people call it YouTube University. Because if you don't know how to unstop a toilet or get an air conditioning going, or you want to put on a roof or build a tiny house or clear up acne or whatever, there's somebody or a lot of people who have these how-to videos on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So
why do you think they have that?
You know,
what do you think they're doing on YouTube with that? What give me your feeling about that.
Well, people are educating themselves and they're educating others. I mean, some people have set up, there's a lot of de facto schools that are set up.
Yeah.
You know,
you remember that,
you
remember
get right
say,
through the meat.
Well, knowledge. You got a smart guy on the phone now. Knowledge is power, okay? And it's really
right.
Not how you get it. As long as you do, you get it. You understand what you're seeing or hearing.
Exactly. Because you have these YouTubers that we're talking about. There are YouTubers out there that are not even 25 years old that have visited. They've visited every country on the planet, and some of them make $15,000 to $35,000 a month or a lot more. Now I'm looking at a lot of these people that these travel vloggers on YouTube, and the common denominator is they don't have a mortgage payment. They have not allowed themselves to get into 30 years worth of debt. Most of them, matter of fact, if not all of them, they don't own a car. They don't have a car note.
Mm-hmm.
So when you don't have a car note, and a lot of them don't have college debt. So when you don't have college debt, you don't have a car note, and you don't have a 30-year mortgage on you.
You got a head start already.
You can travel the world and get educated that way.
Yeah. But, you know, let me say this, Lee. You got people on your line there, clients there. Let me say this. You know what I would do if I – you know what I would tell a person that maybe would come to me right now and say, Albert, what should I do with my life? Because my grandson did it. That's why I'm talking from my own experience. They might not want to go to college. They might and they'll come to you and say, well, what can I do to make money and have a decent family and then be comfortable when I get older? You know what I tell them to do? If you don't want to go to college, take a vocational or training in vocational, because the trades are always needed. We own a home. We need plumbing work. We need faucet work. We need ACs worked on. That would be the person that is not interested in college. And maybe if they get that start from the beginning like that, it'll motivate them to go further if they want to pursue other things in college. But you got to give them some motivation to get them started. My grandson came to me about 10 years ago. And believe it or not, he's 33 years old now. He came to me about 10 years ago, and he had came from San Jose. And he had no job experience working in cafes and just stuff like that. And he started singing one group that he was singing with. But we were coming home. I was driving, and he was in the car, my wife and I. He was talking about the group. He said, Dad, Grandpa, what do you think about the group? I said, a group sounds good. I said, what's going to happen if the guy, the main singer, what are you going to do? I think he really thought about that. And then he come back about a week later and said, Grandpa, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start singing for myself. And he can sing. And now he's down in L.A., California, because I told him to get out of Fresno. And he's made it big down there. And he's give gigs when he wants to. He's running things down there. And I just talked to him the other day. His birthday was the other day, and he called me, and he said, Grandpa, you don't have to worry about me no more. I'm coming. But that's what shows me is growth. It's not about the money. Like somebody said that earlier. I think Robert did. It's the progress of what you can accomplish. We all are put here on this earth to provide, to cherish people in the right frame of mind. And I think I'm proud of him. But when he came to Fresno to live, he told me, I didn't know this, but he said, Grandpa, you know, I was almost in a gang. He said, I was mad at the world, he said, when I was living in San Jose. And I worked with him for about a couple of years after he got here. And he made it big in Fresno. He made it pretty big. Everybody knew him in Fresno. I said, but now, Zoe, it's time for you to move to the bigger media. And he didn't want to go to school because he went to City College for about one semester here. And he said something I never forgot. He said, Grandpa, I said, why did you drop out of school, Zoe? He said, Grandpa, I know more than those professors know about my music. I know what I want to do. But what am I going to say? He had to follow his dream. And wherever you find it, follow it. And what if I would have said, no, you got to go to college, finish City College? And he wouldn't have been happy. So you got to let a person find their niche. You have to. Go ahead.
I agree with that. And the way, particularly with the Internet now, information, like we're talking in real time, so we can act. Somebody can throw out an idea, and we can act on it in real time. Whereas with matter of fact, I'm going to pick this up next Friday. Amish Enterprise will pick up from where we're leaving off today, because I want to bring on hopefully we can get him on, a college professor, a friend of mine,
yeah.
Because he. he can tell you how colleges operate with course selection, curriculum, all that. Because, like, with a college, there's a bureaucracy there. So a lot of the information that you might get in a college textbook might be outdated.
Right.
Whereas,
That's true.
Like I said, what we're talking about right now, we can, well, matter of fact, Robin did it. Robin, what, 2-3 weeks ago, whatever it was, it was less than a month ago, Robin formed her own town, Maben Town, which is in Texas.
She did that in
real time. Robin, you still there? All right, her, well, she might have stepped away. Anyway, well, but...
She's there.
Huh?
Yeah,
oh, Robin,
I'm here. So
how quick? You set up Maben Town, like, in real time. How long did it take you to set that up?
Okay, so the first thing I did was get a EIN number. So that was 10, 15 minutes. On the internet, IRS.gov, and then once I got that, I went to Ink Files and went through the process of submitting, registering. That took maybe 5-10 minutes. So we're talking under 30 minutes.
That's creative, Robin.
She did that in real time with no college courses.
Well, that's why you made a statement earlier. The Amish, they don't want to get to the eighth grade. Why do you think it's that way? They don't need no more education. Not to what they want.
Yeah,
they
no more book education.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Look at Robin. Robin came from something that no one would have ever thought of would happen. Never. See, that's why success like that, it creates more success. Okay, and when people catch on, they catch on. Okay, what gave
now,
you
also,
asking,
Robin? Before I get more credit, Robin. Now, Robin, Maben Town is a 2-acre town. We call it a micro town. Chris Collins came up with the name micro towns, that particular niche. But now, Robin, how long did it take you to come up with Abiding Faith Housing Ministries?
About the same amount of time. And then,
right,
and
we rolled that out on this past Monday.
Once I did the processing, you know, I submitted it, then it took the registration to the state registration to process. It took
creative.
2 weeks.
Very creative. Very
okay,
creative.
And then We booked the first tour, which takes place next month, September the 9th. That's the first tour for Abiding Faith Housing Ministry. That's where
amazing.
You know, we help people
amazing.
Buy acres of land and build. So that basic, Robin set all that up.
That's in real time.
She did it in
that's
real
time that's
without going to college.
That's the genius, Lee. That's why I said, if you got ideas, you got money. You got ideas, you got security. You got ideas,
right.
you're a complete person. That's what it is.
And ask yourself, always asking yourself questions. What can I do? How can I do this? How will I do this? Okay? Always be, like you say, Albert, push yourself. Come on.
Yes.
Come on.
Yes.
Now,
let me wrap it up.
Now, for people that are interested, you don't have to have any experience, we'll train you, and interested in becoming tour guides for the Abiding Faith Housing Ministries, where we teach people how to buy land by the acre. That's the main thing. If you want to learn how to build your own house, we'll do that. But to be a tour guide,
so
you can earn anywhere from $200 to $1,000 a weekend.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Go ahead, Rob.
That's good.
What will the tour guides be doing, L.A.?
Well, after we train them, they'll be basically giving tours. Like, we got this 5 acres here, 10 acres here, 20 acres here. will be training you on how to basically educate your people that are interested in buying.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
I'm cutting in. Now, in your part of the country there, living state, is there any license involved to when you start showing other people homes?
Not to be a tour guide. You do not need a license.
Listen, Albert, we're not doing building, and we're not doing
that's right. That's religious. That's right. You said it makes a difference.
Right. We're not proselytizing or nothing like that.
That's good. That's a very good idea, though. Seriously.
Passport to the community, and they'll be mentorship. Their passport will afford them a certain amount of space where they can abide their residence. Their housing, their business.
That's a very good idea, Robin. Very good idea.
So there's no real estate transactions.
That's a very good. But Tina, look what you created already. You don't think you're going to draw some interest with that?
Like I said, you can earn anywhere from $200. If you're looking for a side hustle, a weekend side hustle, you can earn anywhere from $200 to $1,000 a weekend.
That's good.
That's a motivator
right there.
Yep. And people can make a decent wage just all in a week and showing being a side for. Albert, let me tell you what I'm doing with Maventown is I'm going to build an amphitheater.
Nice.
An outdoor entertainment so that your grandson can come and perform on my stage.
We'll see. You got a night. We talked about him before. I think I told you about him, didn't I, Robin?
Before I was doing some work with him
That's right.
So, and then I'm also going to build a movie and film production studio, like a studio city, if you will.
I love the dreams what you're talking about, Robin, because most people can't say that. They don't know how to dream like that. To me, you're the true banks and the money makers. Believe me, that's what it's about.
We got to wrap it up for the day before Blog Talk kicks us off. So, Albert, I'm going to let you have the last word for the day.
Is all your audience there still? All your audience?
They're still here. They're still here.
Now, they know how to get a hold of me again. Do everybody know how to get a hold of me?
Well, put it out there again, Albert.
Okay, you can reach me under my email, which is B as in boy, E-R-T. My name spelled backwards, actually. L-E-L-B-E-R-T. E11@yahoo.com. You can get some of my other books, or either you can go on the internet on the Amazon and look up my name, or look up the name of the book I put out there. Strive to Arrive.
That's Strive to Arrive. Strive to Arrive by Albert Lee.
Yes. Uh-huh. And I've written 5 books. I got one on how to make money 24 hours a day. That's the first book Lee talked about. I got that in PDF, Lee. I'm going to send you a copy of that, okay?
All right, great.
Because I redone that book over the years. And then I got...
I like to read the updated one.
Yeah. Okay, but now... what do you want? Go ahead on, Lee. I know you're on a time limit there.
Well, we'll wrap it up on that. And, Albert, if you're available next Friday, because I'm giving you all assignment. The book that you can order from Amazon they don't have a Kindle version. The name of the book is Amish Enterprise. Amish Enterprise, that's the name of the book, by Donald B. Crable, that's K-R-A-Y-B-I-L-L, one word,
and Stephen N. Nolt, N-O-L-T. Amish Enterprise. This is part one. Now, next Friday, we're going to get into the book.
Yeah, that's a bite.
We introduced the book today, but we really didn't get into the book. So
yeah, the way
it's our official So thank you all for calling in. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Enjoyed it. And
everybody have a good weekend.
Yeah, we enjoyed it. All right. Love you guys.